786-456-4837 is the telephone number. If you want to talk to Ron McGill, we always learn things around here about the animal kingdom. So if you have questions, 786-456-4837. He is calling us right now from Zoo Miami, which had to close down again because Miami is just infested. So what happened here, Ron? You're there, and not many people are there.
No, there's nobody here except for essential staff, you know, all of the guest services people. Well, a lot of the guest services people have been reassigned. I mean, they're doing things like helping with horticulture, helping paint and restore some areas in the park while there's nobody here. But, yeah, there's no public here. You know, most of the part-timers are home. All of the concession people are home. So, you know, it's been profoundly, you know, devastating for a lot of people. It really has been.
Chris, did you have something for Ron McGill a little happier than what it is that I'm talking to him about?
Ooh, this is actually not that much happier. We were talking about cemeteries today. My dad is very obsessed with visiting cemeteries, and it got me thinking, if humans are the only species that bury people once they die, like, what do other animals do when they have family members or friends that die?
You know, some animals certainly mourn. I don't know of animals that actually bury their dead, so to speak. But there are animals that certainly mourn their dead. You know, we've heard about elephants, how they come back sometimes year after year to the bones as if they recognize the dead. We've seen the same thing with some primates. But I don't know of any animals that bury their dead other than perhaps to hide the scent to draw in predators. You know, they might be something to just bury, or this might sound graphic, but there's a lot of animals that eat their dead babies, that their babies are born dead, or sometimes they just stress out and they eat their babies. But it's not, of course, a type of mourning like we're looking at for the cemetery. So short answer, no, I don't know of any animals that bury their dead.
Wow, we took a detour into the eating of dead babies there. 786-456.
Well,
I said it would be a lighter question and answer, and then we went to dead eaten babies.
But you know, there are animals that are known to eat their babies. You know, sometimes it's during a first birth. Sometimes it's a stress of something. Sometimes when animals are born, stillborn, they will eat the babies. So, I mean, this nobody knows the exact reason behind it. It's just a bunch of speculation, but the fact is it happens.
Great. It gets worse with stillborn. 786-456-4837 is the telephone number. If you want to talk to Ron McGill, Al, you're on with Ron McGill. Go ahead, Al.
Yes, Ron, I am terrified of snakes, and I've always wondered what would happen if snakes went extinct. Like, what would happen to the world? And Billy, could you put it on the poll? Should snakes be extinct?
Well, Billy, you can 86 that poll, because if you made snakes extinct, you would have a plethora of vermin that could spread disease like crazy, destroy crops like crazy. Just the rodents alone that snakes feed on would be one of the most destructive parts of our environment, where they're not being controlled specifically by snakes. So snakes play a huge role in controlling those vermin, and in turn, you know, helping our agriculture, helping our crops, helping the spread of disease. Snakes are very valuable. I understand the fear that so many people have of them, but I try to urge you, if you can just learn a little bit more about them, if you could brave yourself to maybe handle one day and understand. I can't tell you how many people I've had shiver in fear. I mean, just sweating, almost to the point where they're going to throw up. They get so scared. And then when I finally get them to hold the animal and they understand, you know, they exhale, they go, wow, it's nothing like what I thought it was going to be. It's just a matter of understanding. It's education. I'm not here proclaiming you should go out and try to grab a snake. Never go to reach a wild snake. It's going to bite you out of fear. The likelihood it's not going to be venomous. You're not going to die from it or even get hurt by it, but it could bite you. But, you know, if you could just get with someone who understands snakes, has a snake that understands people are not going to be a threat, let you handle it, you'll see they're really quite fascinating.
What is the animal we could least afford to lose because of the damage it would do to an ecosystem?
You know, I bees and bats. I mean, bees and pollinators, because it's such a domino effect. When you can't pollinate a plant, the plant can't reproduce. The plant can't produce fruits. It can't produce flowers. Can't produce nectar, which feeds a buttload of other types of animals. That becomes a snowball effect. It starts just
totally unnecessary buttload. Totally unnecessary.
I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent, Dan. I'm tired. I don't have my radio filter on.
I mean, unbelievable. I don't know why there was a load of butt there.
Ron, I'm wondering which animal we could do without. Like, is there an animal that's just not that important?
Useless. The Greg Cody of the animal kingdom.
You know, I'll tell you, The animal, if I had to eliminate one animal on Earth, it would be the mosquito. Now, the mosquito is food for a lot of other animals, but I'm wondering if those other animals could not adapt to eat other types of insects. I mean, there are other insects other than mosquitoes. It's just, if you had to put a gun to my head and say, okay, what animal's going to go extinct, I would say the mosquito, specifically that breed that carries dengue, carries West Nile virus, that horrible species of mosquito that is responsible for more deaths than any other animal on Earth.
Jackie, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hi. So I've noticed that dogs have an extra flap in their ears, and I'm wondering what function that serves or if there's a reason for it.
What animals have an extra flap in their ears?
Dogs. On the ears, there's like a little pocket. I don't know what that pocket's for. Like a little pocket on the ears.
On our ears or what specific animals?
Dogs' ears, man. Dogs.
Oh, dogs'
ears. Wow-wows.
Okay, you don't. I got it. I got dogs. You didn't have to go to Wild.
You haven't been the same since that load of butt comment. get it together, McGill.
Dogs' hearing is absolutely phenomenal. You know, they hear in frequencies that we cannot hear at. You know, you've heard the thing, people blowing a dog whistle and you don't hear anything, and the dog is like, oh, it goes crazy, okay? So all those little...
flap, Ron?
What's this coach speak?
You're doing...
Answer the question. Dogs have an extra flap.
It helps funnel sound into the ear.
He's getting to it.
Okay, it helps funnel sound into the ear. That flap, when it flops over, isn't very functional, but that's probably a result of just domestication and breeding and stuff like that. But the large ear, the whole part of the ear that might turn into a flap, is just like a big cone to collect sound to send it into the ear, because hearing is so important to dogs and other animals for that matter.
Stugatz, I owe Ron McGill an apology. This is what's happening. I just need the audience to know it. These are stressful times, all right? Everyone is stressed out. Ron McGill is he's a modern-day Tarzan. He is maybe the nicest person in the history of this show, beating out even Tim Kirkchen, okay? Like, he is a delightfully nice, nice man. But in these troubled times...
No, but I shouldn't have said buttload. I shouldn't have said that.
Everyone is irritable.
It's okay, Ron.
Everyone is irritable, and so let's just settle down here.
Right.
Try to gather ourselves. Yes, Billy, what do you have?
Guys are being super rough on him during the dog question.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, all right. Thank you for nothing, Billy. JC, you're on with Ron McGill. Go ahead, JC.
Thanks, Dan. God, I love this show. Ron, hey, despite their outward appearances, what are the major differences between a horse and a zebra? Thank you.
Well, certainly the big difference is just their demeanor. I mean, zebras are much more tightly wound. They're very, very easily stressed. They're very high strung. But generally speaking, it's more the coloring than anything else, even though some zebras, some species of zebra, like the Grevy zebra, is more like a donkey than it is a horse. Has the big ears, the big, you know, the big snout, whereas the common zebra, the Burchells or plain zebra, tends to be more like a horse.
I was going to say the stripe. Really
Well, the stripe, didn't he say other than the obvious when he asked the question?
Greg Cody, you're on with Ron McGill. Go ahead, Greg.
God, hey, Ron. Ron's I read the today. Headline, Siberian Zoo sees animal baby boom during lockdown, and I wonder if there's been a similar phenomenon that you've noticed at your place.
Well, we've seen a lot of babies being born, but it just happens to be that the lockdown kind of coincided with spring and summer, which is the time when most babies are born. So I think people are just, you know, they're home, they're quarantined, they don't have a lot of time to do a lot of the other things they want to do, so they now have the time to listen to things and observe things, and they realize, hey, look at all these animals being born at the zoo. The fact of the matter is, it's that time of year, spring and summer. I don't want to say it's really because of the pandemic, even though there is a possibility, of course, that when you don't have a lot of human traffic, the animals might be, you know, less taken by those humans and have more time to spend on each other. And, you know, reproduction is part of that alone time, so to speak.
Chris has declared it, despite what Ron McGill tried to do there with a late rally, the worst Ron McGill segment ever. Chris Cody in the chat has, yes, well, come on out here and make the allegation publicly instead of hiding in the shadows. It was not Ron McGill's greatest work. And you, Chris Cody, have declared it the worst Ron McGill segment ever.
I mean, I believe I just pitched it as a question. You know, I didn't really say it as a declarative statement, but he's been pretty bad, I have to admit.
All right. Okay.
Oh, wait, how about the guys asking the questions? You guys, you know, you're so quick to throw blame around. You never accept it where it starts. You know, especially you, Dan. You're just such an instigator. I don't know why you just all of a sudden think that, oh, I can make fun and do this, you know. This is... All right, I'll just talk to you guys next week, okay?
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, he did. The worst segment ever.
Hold that thought. Let's sell some ads.
Punctuated with Ron McGill just evaporating, leaking confidence. We're all very stressed. You just saw it. Even the zoo segment, a form of purity since we began at ESPN. The people we've had to fight off in order to keep that zoo segment. I'm talking to you, Mo Davenport.
I mean, throw the guy a bone.
Baby. Billy, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Your timing was so bad on Stripes. Like, all you had to do was...
I need a long pause, man. I mean...
So bad.
Every dog has his day, Dan.
We could have been doing this the entire rest of the segment, but because you botched the Stripes and the wrong timing, I had to bail on the whole thing. Could have been doing it for 10 minutes right now.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed any of the show, you can listen to all 3 hours of the Dan Le Batard Show, plus our Miami Only Hour and our Best of Podcast on Demand in the ESPN app. And subscribe to the Le Batard and Friends Podcast Network featuring South Beach Sessions, Stupidity, and Mystery Crate. Please rate and subscribe. New episodes are posted every week wherever you get your podcast. Greg Cody giving the straight talk is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
So, Roy, you were in here when we had the latest South Beach session with Jorge Masvidal. What would you just give me a couple of words, a couple of quick thoughts on why people should or shouldn't listen to the latest South Beach session with Jorge Masvidal?
Well, I would definitely say it was not boring. It was a very interesting debate between two Cubans, by the way, on how politics are working, not only in this country, but in Cuba as well. So I thought it was a very interesting listen.
All right. So and thank you for saying that way. That was very nice. I thought it was a bit awkward and I wanted to have fun and do superficial talk with Jorge Masvidal. But the audience sort of pressured us into, hey, explain your allegiances to this guy, given his politics. Stugatz was on a stage with him, and the audience wanted some explanations for why we hadn't questioned him on stuff.
Well, I'm glad you did it. I'll do the silly stuff with Masvidal this week.
And I'm jealous of you, because you'll be able to have fun with Stupidity. And over here, the audience forced me and held me accountable to talk politics. And so what this will show you, even if it's uncomfortable, what it will show you is why and how we arrive in South Florida, where Cubans are the only demographic with whom Donald Trump has improved since 2016. And his politics and my politics as it comes to Cuba are not the same. So if you want a window into that, that's what you're going to get. It wasn't comfortable for me to do because I prefer to do the superficial stuff. I prefer to do the silly stuff. I don't actually want to talk politics around here. I really don't. I would have liked Jorge Masvidal more if I'd never had this conversation with him. But it's not a conversation that I wouldn't recognize among his elders in the Cuban community, which are doing weird things in South Florida. Like if there's a Black Lives Matter protest, all of a sudden you've got a truck banging into somebody where these things are not supposed to be this flared up.
I want to like Masvidal. Do I have to listen? And am I now free to go about my business with Masvidal, which is funny stuff?
I would advise you to not even listen to it. You don't really need it. There's no point for you to listen to him and I talk about how Cubans arrive in such different places.
It's a bizarre way to promote this one, but sometimes ignorance can be bliss. Look at Stugatz. He's the most blissful of us.
Listen, I'd prefer, I would have liked my life better if I hadn't spent 40 minutes in that conversation.
And you felt forced to, because you would have much rather had the fun.
They held us accountable, and so we did what you wanted, and now that's the result. Do with it what you will.
Credit to you. I just wanted to sprint the hell away from it.
Yes, great. It felt
Block
great.
Was a little hot. Maybe I'll circle back when he fights again in 6 months, and we can all just sort of move past hashtag Quainon.
The audience made us do it, and I'm not. You made me uncomfortable, and that's okay. Like that's part of what has to happen here with some of the things going on in this country. I actually thank you for it, even though I was mother bleeping you the entire time I was having this conversation, because I'm like, he's going to get mad. He's not going to like this. Do I want to have this conversation that I was having with my abuela like 60 years ago? I mean, like, no, I don't want to have this conversation again about how terrible Cuban communism is and how it affects every time you read something in a newspaper or you distrust the government. Like, I don't want to conjure up all that. It feels unbelievably crappy. Speaking of which, my wife has written in, You guys need to be nicer to Ron McGill. He's stressed out right now.
You don't get the show.
Oh. Oh. Valerie. Oh,
wow.
Valerie, you're my wife. John Moxie next. I hope that the current AEW world champion understands that I mean no disrespect. I don't know. I am ignorant to some of the modern wrestling. Mike Ryan tells me that AEW is actually doing it better than your traditional sports, and he's the AEW world champion right now. Mike, before we get to John Moxley, can you tell me your degree of excitement in this guest and how he does his job?
Oh, I love Mox, and he's a great talker on the microphone, so hopefully this is a fun interview and I haven't raised expectations too much.
All right. Well, John, thank you for joining us. I wonder your character for the uninitiated like me, or who you are as a wrestler. How would you describe that to the uninitiated?
That is a pretty tough question, because I pretty much just go out there and be myself, and the standard rule of thumb in wrestling for a good wrestling character, you know, that really clicks on all cylinders is just be yourself with the kind of cliche, but be yourself with the volume turned up to 11. So I'm pretty aggressive, pretty in your face. If you're in a match with me, it's going to be a fight to the, you know.
Well, yes, it's that death match thing. You're insane is what it is, right? If your brand is insane.
Not so much insane. I don't really, like, a lot of people say that. They're like, this dude's crazy. I don't understand. I just think I'm pretty rational and have a pretty logical outlook on everything. There's a difference between being insane and just, like, not giving a F, you know? I just don't give a, I don't care, you know? Like, I've been in this a long time. I've been through just about everything you possibly go through. So, like, I'm not going to be, like, intimidated by pretty much anything. So, like, I know the drill, basically, you know, like, if you're some big, strong dude, like, I just defended the world title against a guy named Brian Cage who looks like something out of a superhero comic book, you know, and they're yelling and screaming at me and trying to get me intimidated. I'm like, I don't know, dude, you're going to throw me around, throw me on my head. It's going to hurt. I don't know. Like, I'm so used to being in pain at this point, that, you know, so, like, you know, you can't really faze me.
Well, explain this to me. When you say I've been through all of it, what are you talking about there? And specifically, what are you talking about as it regards the physical pain?
Well, I mean, pro wrestling is the most physical sport, you know, in the world. A lot of athletes, football players, and people from other sports, you know, think like, oh, it's, I can just walk right in there and do that because, you know, it's not a real competition. Anybody can do that, right? That's not the case at all. It's actually it's one of the hardest things to master, you know, on the intellectual side and the physical side. And, you know, talking about what all I've been through everything or whatever, it's not just, you know, getting slammed on thumbtacks and barbed wire and thrown off of cages and set on fire and all that. Like, that's all the easy part. Like, you know, just the years and years of being on the road. I mean,
the easy part?
Did you 250, 300 days a year for years and years, and like just the night in, night out, getting slammed, working through injuries. You know, it just takes its toll on your body. But I'm in a pretty good place physically right now. So
hold on a second. Hold on, John. So the easy part you just described, I believe, is being thrown on barbed wire and being set on fire. That's the thing you just did, and you didn't even mention the staph infection that nearly killed you.
Yeah, that's not fun. No, that's not fun. But, yeah, surgeries and being in a hospital and stuff is not fun. I've been pretty lucky. I've only had one issue that required surgery. And they required like three of them because it was like a tricep repair. And then there was an infection. So I had to go back in for a staph infection and then back in again over a year later to get rid of the rest of the staph infection. So it was really only one issue. But I've been pretty lucky overall. I'm just used to, like, my face line. People be like, how do you feel?
John.
How do you feel today? And it's like, my baseline is like, I feel like crap. That's just where I'm so used to, like, being in pain.
All right, John, but this
like
is...
It's a pretty chill morning here. It's like 9 in the morning. So, like, you know, I'm still, like, I can barely move at this point, you know.
John, hold
so
on.
I like to train early in the morning.
Right.
So I have to get up. I have to get up at least 2. Like, if I train at 9, I got to get up at 7. Because it's going to take me that long to, like, loosen my body up,
John,
and warm up.
This has gotten very dark, John. John, look, you're the champion.
Well, you asked.
Hey, it sounds like a misery.
Hold on a second. But you're the champion, and I don't want to be reminded that you guys die early because you're in so much damn pain. I don't want to talk about all the painkillers that you have to take in order to get through your day. It makes me sad.
No, luckily our generation now, that we've kind of left that to the generation of the past, learned from the mistakes of past generations. You really won't see a lot of that anymore. You know, we got a good, healthy, young generation, you know. But I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I'm the happiest guy in the world. I mean, I'm living my dream. I'm on top of the world right now. I'm AEW world champion. You know, I'm loving it. I'm part of the best, the best wrestling product on TV right now. AEW Dynamite Wednesday nights. You know, if you're a wrestling fan, if you've ever been a wrestling fan, when you were a kid at any point in your life, a lot of people, you know, are the quote unquote lapsed fan. You know, they're like, I used to watch wrestling back in the day, but I got kind of corny. I don't watch it anymore. Well, you're the kind of guy, you know, we're trying to bring back in. You know, we've looped a lot of old fans in and made them fans again. So AEW is not, you know, the same old crap you used to see on TV that's just kind of gotten lame. You know, we're exciting, we're bringing out surprises, we have there's basically no rules to what we do. You could see anything on Dynamite. You know, there's so much creativity, and we have like the greatest, coolest, youngest roster of the most incredible high flyers and insane athletes just doing stuff that'll just blow your mind, and nobody here is under any restrictions or anything. You're seeing everybody go out there and just put on, nobody's out there. You know, everybody's out there putting on authentic performances, being themselves, laying it on the line. And everybody on Dynamite every week busts their ass. I mean, we really go for it to try to put on, you know, a show that is, you know, Dynamite, that is explosive. That's like, we want to us every single week is we're trying to hook new fans. We want somebody that's flipping through the channel to be like, damn, that was cool. And hook them back in. So tonight, every single Wednesday night for us is, there's a playoff game. It's a Super Bowl or whatever. You know, it's like a chance to hook new fans and blow away our existing fans and keep upping the expectation. So, you know, and this Wednesday night's going to be an awesome show. I will give you I'm not going to spoil it, but I will tell you, I will give you this information. Tomorrow night on Dynamite, there will be a big surprise, and one that made me exceedingly happy, especially for the more hardcore fans who kind of follow the scene around the world. You're going to get a big surprise, and it will be, and even more casual fans or first time viewers.
Moxley, you're undeterred.
There will be an absolute kick ass.
Listen to me. You were doing an interview, and then you went straight into promotion, and you did it the crappiest way possible with, there'll be a surprise tomorrow night. Come on, Moxley.
He's got Moxie.
Come on.
I'm a professional, dude. This is not the first time I've done this.
You're 34 years old, and it takes you 2 hours to stop creaking in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm living the dream.
All right. Good talking to you. We appreciate it. It didn't always used to be John Moxley, though.
No, I'm wondering. And by the way, AEW Dynamite airs Wednesday night, 8 Eastern on TNT. He's the world champion. How did Jonathan David Good become John Moxley?
The actual name was just, it's a longer story that's not interesting, but it was just given to me by an older wrestler randomly 2 minutes before I walked out for my very first match when I was 18 years old, and I just have kept it ever since. And I like it. It's happy.
Very good. Thank you, John. We appreciate the time. The champion. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. The Dan Le Batard Show is brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for the ultimate protection and shine in no time.
Mike, can you help me understand? Because that's one of the best songs I've heard us do around here. I liked what those listeners created. We love the community of listeners who create ridiculous songs. Those about Stugatz are usually very good, comprehensive. When we shift from 3 hours on the radio to 2 hours on the radio and 2 hours via podcast, will I be able to play songs like that more freely or less freely because it's a podcast audience versus a radio rights audience?
Unfortunately, less freely. In fact, the reason why we sort of approach the songs the way that we do is because of that digital audio audience. It creates all sorts of problems with copyrights.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked. Yet another thing that people will get in the way of our fun on. So less... does it seem like people are playing defense against us around here right now?
Championship defense. Yeah.
Like championship
the
defense?
Whole pandemic thing.
Yeah, there's
just
that.
Just a secret code to enter the building.
Yeah, there is the pandemic, so I shouldn't complain about that, right? That it
this
feels
is a blessing
like,
that we still have our jobs.
Okay.
Yes.
I should just be grateful. I shouldn't feel like everyone's playing defense against us at the company.
We're working, Dan. We're being paid to work, okay? I'm grateful for the 3 hours that we have for now that we get to work every day. Soon it will be two, but I'll still be getting paid the same, and I'll be just as grateful, if not more grateful, for that. I mean,
well, one thing that's disappearing appears to be NFL preseason games, and Greg Cody of the Miami Herald, our resident football guru, been covering the pigskin for many years across decades, talking to an imaginary bird to set up his predictions for the week for about two decades, right? The upset bird. How long has the upset bird existed, Greg Cody?
I think since the early 90s.
Oh, dear God.
I'm going to say that, yeah.
Say
in
hi
fact,
to
Dan Le Batard had a big hand in inventing the upset bird, if I recall.
How about that?
Okay, so wow, what a legacy. And so the upset bird, the bird that you consult for predictions, thinks what of the NFL having no preseason games?
We're thrilled about that. There's nothing sadder than, stiffing fans for a full price by including exhibition games as part of the season ticket package. I'm glad it's disappearing. It's the only good thing to come of this pandemic, by the way, other than the Greg Cody show starting just as the pandemic did podcast.
What? Greg, I mean, like, the preseason is something that I'm not a fan of, but if you have, okay, like, if you're a Dolphin fan and you don't want to throw Tua right into the fire, you would prefer him to have a couple of games, a couple of snaps, maybe a dress rehearsal game, something like that. If indeed you have this good young quarterback that everyone a couple of years ago wanted before Joe Burrow had the greatest season a college football quarterback has ever had. So as much as I don't want the preseason, I would imagine a team like the Dolphins who have a young quarterback, they probably, them and their fans probably want a preseason so Tua can get those repetitions, you know?
You know what? Have a scrimmage, have a full contact.
This was the Dan Le Batard Show on ESPN Radio.
We live in a racist country.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.